Balance, over eyes.
Please be seated.
Yes, Mr. Hodge.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, before we broke, we were looking at those emails on the 15th of March. You might remember I asked you some questions about meetings that had happened with the Director General and the Acting Director General immediately beforehand. And I'd understood your evidence to be that you could remember a meeting slightly earlier on the 8th of March 2022 that you attended.
Yes.
And can you tell us, first, I hadn't seen you deal with that meeting in your witness statements.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
It wasn't a formal meeting, so possibly not.
Okay. So there was a meeting, and did you attend it in person?
No.
Okay, you were by phone.
Yes.
And who were the other people at the meeting or on the phone call?
Well, it was Teams, so I was aware that Professor McNeil, Dr. Petra Derrington, Dr. John Wakefield, and Mr. Sean Drummond. As far as I knew, I couldn't see anyone else.
So Mr. Wakefield was the outgoing?
He was.
Director General?
He was.
And Mr. Drummond was the incoming?
Yes.
Director General.
Yes.
And what was the reason for the meeting, as you recall?
I thought it was to, from memory, it was to discuss, you know, the final sort of way forward with the what's now being called the external review.
Do you recall anyone at the meeting or on the Teams call, I should say, expressing the view that, I'll withdraw that. Do you recall anyone on the Teams call noting that the lab was accredited by NATA?
Oh, probably.
Do you recall anyone on the Teams call saying something to the effect that accreditation by NATA amounted to an external validation of FSS's systems and processes?
I have.
Do you recall anyone on the call expressing the view that for that reason an independent review was not necessary?
I don't recall that.
Is it possible that somebody said that?
I guess it's possible.
Do you recall whether Professor McNeil expressed that view?
It's possible.
And do you recall whether you agreed with that view?
I don't, as I said earlier, NATA's only one aspect.
Yes, I understand, but just come back to, perhaps I'll try to simplify it. Do you recall anyone expressing the view on the call that an external, I'm sorry, I withdraw that. Do you recall anyone on the call expressing the view that an independent review was not necessary?
No, I don't recall that.
Did you have the view that an independent review was not necessary?
No, I did not.
You thought it was necessary?
I was very happy that it was going ahead.
That's not an answer to my question. You know that. Did you think that an independent review was necessary?
Yes, I did.
And did you communicate that view to somebody?
I put, I can't recall when I would have, but there's certainly an email that says that any review needs to be transparent.
Did you communicate to anyone the view that an independent review was necessary?
I don't recall whether I did. I mean, certainly the briefing notes suggest I did.
When you say that, the briefing notes suggest that you drafted a briefing note. What I want to understand is, did you communicate to anyone that you held the view that an independent review was necessary? And if so, who and when?
I'm sure I have done that. I don't recall the dates and times and who to.
I see. But you think you said it to someone?
Yes.
But not in writing?
Beg your pardon?
Not in writing?
Certainly my, not in those exact words, but certainly you can see from my statement and my attachments that I did support it.
I don't know that we can see that from your attachments, so that's why I want to understand it. I know in your statement you reject the proposition that's come from Mr. Drummond that you didn't think an independent review was necessary. So that's why I want to understand it. Can you think of anything that you might have said that would might have been conveyed the impression that you did not support an independent review?
The only thing I can think of is early on there was a we had a whole of staff meeting where we were just, you know, I was offering support and I was saying, you know, we have NADA accreditation and, you know, this will be, everything will be okay. So if that's been interpreted that way, then certainly that's not, I certainly still do support an independent review.
When was that meeting?
I have to have a look at my notes. But it was it's in my statement that there was a meeting.
A whole staff meeting?
Yes.
Does that mean the whole staff of the laboratory?
Oh, DNA is only one small part of the FSS, yes. Very small compared to the rest. So, yes, that team.
And was it, if you just try to fix it by reference to a date, the one that you're talking about, was it?
It may have been, I could go back and check, but it may have been in December.
In December?
Possibly. I'll can check my notes.
Last, well, why don't you, you've got your statements there, yeah. I see. Why don't you identify for us what you're talking about?
Okay. There was a meeting. There was a meeting that was attended by Professor McNeil and Brett Bricknell, and at that meeting, we were trying to reassure the staff, you know, that we had, that they had our support, and I may very well have said, and you know, we're NADA accredited, and that's a good thing. That doesn't mean that I didn't support a review.
Where have you found that?
No, I haven't found it yet. I'd have to.
When was it? You
did, that's what I'm trying to find for you. Sure, there's reference to that meeting somewhere in my statement.
Look, I think I think you'll be back tomorrow, Ms. Keller.
So okay, great.
Overnight you can see if you can identify.
I will.
What you're talking about. So to come back to the meeting on the 8th of March, do you remember any discussion about a 1% number at that meeting or less than 2%?
No, I don't think so, no.
I see. You, it's a bit unclear to me. Have you actually read the transcript of what Mr. Drummond said in his evidence?
Yes.
Okay. And you know that one of the things he says is that at around that time, that is the 8th of March meeting, they were being told that it was a 1% issue?
That's what was happening at the time. I don't recall mentioning that in that meeting, but certainly that's what I was being told is the 1.86% figure.
you were being told that by Ms. Allen and Mr. Howe.
Yes.
And then you were communicating that up.
Yes.
I see.
Well, I don't know if I said it at that meeting, though.
But at times you were communicating to your superiors that it was a.
Yes.
That this was an issue about a tiny fraction of cases.
Yes.
And again, do the best you can for us. Did you ever say to them, but the police think it's 30%?
No.
Why not?
Because at that time we didn't have the review, we didn't have the findings, we didn't have the documents.
It doesn't answer the question though, does it? And this is what I'm trying to understand. You know your superiors are dependent upon you to provide them with accurate information so they can make decisions.
Yes.
You agree with that?
Yes.
You knew, you must have known by the beginning of March that the police had been consistently saying, not just to Cathy Allen, who's then communicating it to you, but saying directly to you, we seem to be getting 30%. So it's not an explanation for not revealing to your superiors that the police were saying 30%, that the lab hadn't yet finished undertaking a review. Do you agree with that?
No, but you can, you know, you can say that if you wish. I don't agree with you, but...
But tell me why.
Because I've said to you that was my understanding at the time.
I understand that.
Doesn't mean that I was lying, because I wasn't lying, so...
I'm not putting to you that you're lying. What I'm trying to understand is why you didn't communicate to your superiors that the concern coming from the QPS was that on retesting, 30% of samples were producing a usable profile.
Or at least that they were saying that.
I acknowledge that now.
I understand, but do the best you can for us. Is there any explanation you can offer for why you didn't inform your superiors of it?
No, because I was under the impression it was 1.86%.
I'm going to press you on this.
Okay.
You were under the impression that the lab was saying that their original data review 4 years earlier had been 1.86%.
Yes.
And you understood, I'm suggesting to you, that the police were saying that as things had actually turned out, it looked like when they retested samples, it was 30%.
Yes.
And what you didn't communicate to your superiors was that the police were saying to you, when we retest, it's 30%.
Yes.
And what you didn't communicate, sorry, I withdraw that. And what I want you to explain to us is why you didn't communicate that to your superiors, that the police were saying to you that when we retest, it's 30%.
I have no explanation for that.
Well, let's think about what the explanations could be. Do you agree with me that if you say to your superiors the issue is about 1% or 2% of cases, that it sounds like it's a very small issue?
Yes.
And do you agree with me that if you said to them, but the police say it's not 1% or 2%, they think it's 30%, and suddenly it looks like a very big issue?
Yes.
And can you see then that one explanation is that you didn't want your superiors to know that this looked like a very big issue?
No, that's not true.
Can you think of another explanation for why you would not have communicated to your superiors that the police were saying that they seem to be getting 30%.
The only explanation is my ignorance, not understanding it. That is the explanation.
The ignorance of what?
Of the scientific differences. That's the reason. Not trying to hide anything, just not understanding it.
But again, and if you think about it, one of the other striking things about your behaviour is that you didn't escalate it to your superiors. Do you agree with that?
You can say that if you wish.
Well, it's not just that I can say that. We did this before lunch. In your statement, you have affirmed that you became concerned in mid-March, and because you were concerned, you escalated it. And we've looked at the email, and I suggest to you that's not what happened. We can see that's not what happened. You told them only because they asked you a specific question.
I raised the issue. Whether or not I put "I am alarmed," I did not. It's the email's there.
Yes, you told them in an email because Professor McNeil asked you a specific question.
I was asked about inquiries, yes.
You didn't tell them because you were escalating.
I don't recall now. Now I've seen that, then I've obviously misunderstood.
Misunderstood what?
When I was preparing my statement, what that was about. That's right.
So, again, tell me if you can offer some explanation for this. It looks like, notwithstanding that you knew that it was a priority issue for the police since mid-December, that the only reason that you eventually told your superiors in mid-March was because Professor McNeil asked you a specific question, and that question was relevant to what public statement Queensland Health was going to make about this issue.
I didn't link it with any public statement. I think I need to mention that by this time I was under the impression that an external review was going to happen, and I was under the impression that that would include a comprehensive review of the service. So I had some level of confidence that that would include multiple aspects of the service.
And do you say that is some explanation for why you didn't at an earlier time escalate the issue to your superiors?
No, I already said that was my ignorance.
And your ignorance resolved the scientific issues, is that right?
So you've repeatedly said 1.86 and 30. I've repeatedly said I didn't understand the concept of the or the significance of the 30. That's the truth.
And again, when you say you didn't understand the significance of it, you understood that there was the 30% was a much larger percentage than less than 2%. So you understood that?
Of course, 1.8630, of course.
And so when you say you didn't understand the significance of it, what is the thing that you didn't understand the significance of?
What I now know, and I didn't know then, was 1.86 was to do with the NCIDD upload. The 30% was whether you actually got a profile. I did not realise that they could have been the same thing.
They couldn't be the same.
Could have been the same thing.
I'm sorry. I'd say what you're saying. What you now understand is 30% is whether you've obtained a profile from a crime scene sample.
Yeah.
1.86% is the obtaining of an NCID uplink.
Yeah.
But again, it just, I don't understand, so I need you to do the best you can for us. What is the thing that you didn't understand that meant you didn't understand that there was some significance to the difference between 2% and 30%?
So 1.86% was what I was being told was the rationale for the agreement that was put into place. I didn't understand that 30% was if the sample was taken all the way through to a DNA profile. I didn't understand at that point in time that not all of the samples were going through to that stage. I didn't understand that at the time. So I believe the 1.86%, and I was under the impression that things were not being missed because the police could retest or do extra testing, reworks, or the scientists could. So that was what happened.
What I have to suggest to you is this, that none of what you've said explains why it is that you would not understand at the most basic level that there was a difference between 2% and 30%, and that that difference was significant without understanding how they were arrived at, and therefore something that you ought to have reported to your superiors. Do you agree with that?
What I would say to you is that we now have the benefit of hundreds and hundreds of hours of reviewing the science. I did not have that at the time. I was making the decisions based on what I knew at the time. We've all been educated since. I'm one of those. So, you know, that is the situation.
Now, before the break, you referred on a number of occasions to meetings that you had with Kathy Allen, where, as I understood it, you were saying you need to go back to your notes to see when it was that you raised with her the issue of the report and the retesting.
I think I may have referred to those notes, or may have referred to it as Tango Amunet, because that's how I was referring to it at the time.
Well, could we bring up, Mr. Operator, can we bring up WIT.0017.0003.0019, and also perhaps bring up that page and the next page on the screen for Ms. Keller? So this is from your, I think I was referring to it as your first statement. It's the one we've tendered, but there was an earlier statement you gave for the purpose of the Commissioner's interim report. But you see in paragraph 82, you say there have been an extraordinary number of discussions regarding forensic DNA analysis unit since my appointment in October 2021, and you say it's impossible to recollect all of them. And then you can see what follows is over the page. Subparagraph B, you say, I have informal notes suggesting that thresholds were discussed in the following on the following dates. Mm-hmm. And then Roman numeral 1 refers to a discussion on the 16th of December 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And Roman numeral 2 refers to a discussion on the 23rd of March 2022. And Roman numeral 3 refers to a discussion on the 7th of April 2022.
Yes.
And I take it, you went through and you reviewed all of the notes that you've kept in relation to meetings you had with Ms. Allen, and these were the only three where you could identify that you seem to have raised in any sense the issue of the testing threshold with Ms. Allen.
Those were the only ones that I had notes on, yes.
Okay. Do you think you raised it at other times?
Oh, quite possibly.
I see. Well, perhaps we might do it in this way. So the first item number one, which is exhibit LK-33.48. Mr. Operator, are you able to bring that up, or do you want me to give you a doc ID to do that?
Like on the left and right.
We can just bring that up on the left, if that's all right. So this is your handwritten note from a meeting on the 16th of December 21.
Looks like it.
And what you're referring to, I think, is there's some boxes at the top, which presumably were a list of things that you'd recorded beforehand to discuss with Ms. Allen.
Or at the time.
And the second one is Operation Tango Amulet. Is that right? Progress?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, so that's the only record you have of a discussion in December of 2021?
I believe so.
Okay. And that's what you're referring to if you look at the right-hand side of the screen as the discussion on the 16th of December?
Yep.
But you can't remember now what the contents of that discussion was?
No, it would have, just been a discussion about, you know, what's required, because that was right when I was copied in.
Okay. And then if we then bring up WIT, again on the left-hand side, store operator, WIT.0017.0094.0001. And this is an agenda document with handwritten notes on it. Is that an agenda document that you prepared beforehand?
No.
Okay. Is it an agenda document that somebody else prepared?
Yes.
Okay. And who is that?
Ms. Allen.
I see. And so what happened was she would send you this agenda document and then you would make notes on it?
Yes, either in advance if I had something I'd like to talk with her about, or as we had our conversation.
Okay. And when you met with her in mid-January of 2022, if we look on items 1 to 7, it doesn't look like she has put down an item about anything to do with the retesting or the threshold.
No.
But if you look down at the bottom left-hand corner, you can see in handwriting you've got two dot points. One is Clifton Strengths rollout, which was that was a kind of workplace culture assessment that you, or workplace mental health assessment that you
That's actually a positive exercise that I rolled out for that team as a starting point to assist them with their engagement in the workplace.
And then Operation Tango Amunet Progress, that's, again, the rare, I think you've said that's the way you were describing it at the time.
Yep.
And it looks like you've just written the words and ticked it.
Yep.
So you can't remember now what it is that you discussed with her in mid-January?
I expect that I asked how, things were going with that inquiry.
I see. And then can we then bring up, oh, Commissioner, I'll tender that document.
The note?
Yes. Oh, well,
the agenda?
The agenda with the notes.
The agenda of the meeting of 13 January 2022 is Exhibit 136.
And can we then bring up WIT.0017.0034.0001? So this is then another one of those agenda documents, this time dated the 10th of February 2022.
Oh, okay, yep.
And again, assuming the same practice was followed, this would have had agenda items that were prepared by Ms. Allen.
Yes.
And take your time, but looking at it, I can't see that it raises the issue of this priority issue for the police about the testing threshold.
Not from Ms. Allen. I can't read my notes. They're too pale.
Oh, well, we can blow it up, I think, to help you. You seem to have made notes at the top half just against the agenda items. And then if we blow up the bottom half. You can see there's some other notes. Is there something there that seems to relate to this priority issue for the police?
No.
Okay.
That doesn't mean we didn't talk about it.
No. Do you agree with me, given you're making notes of a discussion, that if you had a discussion about a topic and it was significant, then you would have made a note of it?
Not necessarily.
I see. So you could have had some discussion, a significant discussion about the fact that QPS had this priority issue that didn't seem to have been addressed and you just wouldn't make a note of it?
I may not have.
You just don't know.
No, I mean, like I said in my statement, multiple conversations about all sorts of things going on.
Thank you. And then you then met with Ms. Allen on the 23rd of March. So can we bring up that, Mr. Operator, is LK-33.51.
Did you want to tender that document?
Oh, I don't think I need to. I think it's gone in as a part of an exhibit already. So this is now the 23rd of March, 2022. You can see that at the top.
Yep.
And again, looks like the same kind of format that it's been. It's something that has an agenda created by Ms. Allen and then you've scribbled some notes on it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then if we blow up the handwriting in the bottom part of the note,
yes.
And that's your handwriting, I take it?
Yes.
And so in that note on the 23rd of March 2022, we can see a bullet point there, which is Tango Amunet report progress.
Yes.
And it looks like, just from the handwriting, the change in pen colour, it looks like you might have made notes beforehand of things you wanted to discuss with Ms. Allen, and then you made some additional notes during the meeting. Do you agree with that?
Yes, that's what it looks like.
And so you made a note that you needed to discuss with her, the Tango Amunet report progress, and then it looks like the note you made during the meeting was Justin finished writing paper, CA, that is Kathy Allen, doing executive summary.
Yes.
And with the benefit of that note, do you remember what it is that you discussed with her about how it was going?
I think I would have just asked her how that was progressing. So that's why she appears to have said that he'd finished writing the paper and she was doing the summary.
And this is the 23rd of March. Do you recall that the week earlier, on the 17th of March, that there'd been a meeting that had occurred with QPS?
Yes.
And do you recall that? Actually, I can show you this just to help you. Can we bring up LK33.54B? Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I apologize. I've given you the wrong one. It's LK33.54. So these are your handwritten notes of that meeting?
Yes.
And if we can we just zoom in on that, Mr. Operator, just to make the whole thing. Do you recall whether at that meeting, oh yes, do you see at the very bottom it says DNA insufficient project? And you see in your handwriting you've got report next week per CA?
Yes.
And does that mean that at that meeting Ms. Allen said the report would be coming in the following week?
It appears so, yes.
You don't remember that now?
I'd have to have a look at the minutes. There should be some minutes, I guess. But, yes, I wouldn't have written it. I'd think otherwise.
And then can we bring up LK-33.49? And you see these are handwritten notes dated the 7th of April 2022. And am I right in thinking all the handwriting we've looked at, that's all your handwriting?
So far.
And at this stage, you asked her again about the threshold report?
Yes.
And you can see that in the third box there, it says threshold report?
Yes.
And then it has some dashes next to it. The first says 25% in bucket two.
Yes.
And the second says options would require FR.
Yes.
Do you know what 25% in bucket two means?
Well, it appears now that that's the buckets that we were talking about.
But do you know what it means to say 25% in bucket two?
There was 25% of the cases were in that bucket.
I see. And then you see, sorry, is that something you remember or that's just
I remember the bucket concepts.
Because another possibility is that 25% of the samples in bucket two were obtaining a profile.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think that's what it means?
No.
And then you see the next dash is options would require FR.
Yep.
Do you know what that was about?
If I recall correctly, at the time, Inspector Neville was had resent that graph back to Ms. Allen, the graph that was in the options paper, and he'd circled, and I think he was suggesting that a review of that range would be something to work through. Maybe lower that bucket two range. That's what I think that 132 lowers to 100 might mean.
I see. So that wasn't something that Ms. Allen was suggesting as a possibility. That was something being suggested by somebody else, so you can't remember now.
Well, I remember at the time Inspector Neville had sent that graph through and he'd questioned and he'd drawn a circle around that and suggested perhaps we could look at dropping that threshold, and I think that's what that related to.
I see. So These seem to be the notes you've taken of your meetings with Ms. Allen between December 2021 and early April 2022 that relate to this threshold report issue.
Yes.
And do you agree with me, in none of these do you record having conveyed to Ms. Allen that there was some urgency to this being done?
I may have.
That is, you're saying you may have conveyed that but not recorded it in your notes?
Yes.
I see.
We both received the email that said that it was.
You both received the email from the police that said that it was? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. And then at the same time as, sorry, I withdraw that. We were looking before at some emails on the 15th of March. So that's when you're emailing Professor McNeil. And we were looking at a note of a meeting you had with the police on the 17th of March, which was the note you had with the police.
Okay.
Do you recall that on those same dates, you also met with Kylie Ricker and Dr. Mueller?
Okay.
Well, all of these things were happening at about the same time.
That was the nature of the work at the time, yes.
And I understood your evidence from this morning to be that you hadn't realised that the issue being raised by Ms. Ricker and Dr. Mueller was the same as the issue in relation to the thresholds that was being raised by the police.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Yes, I had understood your evidence this morning to be that you hadn't understood that the issue being raised by Ms. Ricker and Dr. Mueller was the same as the issue being raised by the police?
Not at that time. I guess I subsequently did. Yes, it's all around the same time.
When do you say you came to that realisation?
That's what I said. I couldn't necessarily remember the exact date.
But you're convinced you didn't know that it was the same issue?
I didn't understand it.
And when you say you didn't understand it, does that mean you didn't understand the complaint being raised by the police, didn't understand the issue being raised by Ms. Ricker and Dr. Mueller, or didn't understand any of what the issue was?
So the issues that were raised by Dr. Mueller and Ms. Ricker related, so Ms. Ricker's related to the what appeared to be a difference of scientific opinion between in relation to the comprehensive report and the preparation for the options paper. And I was concerned about that from the perspective that it didn't seem that there'd been the way, it didn't seem that the concerns had been incorporated into that report. So that was what Ms. Ricker was talking about, and Ms. Ricker was challenging the science behind that, and she was also raising that there was concern that her essentially her voice had not been heard at that stage. That's what I understood about that. Ms. Ricker subsequently came back and gave me quite a few documents which were, you know, really technical documents which had some handwritten commentary from, I think, another of the scientists. And that at that stage, I was of the understanding that there was they weren't agreeing with the science in 2018, and that they were also not being given the opportunity to have that heard. So that was what I understood from Ms. Ricker's. Dr. Mueller raised different issues with me. She raised the issues of, she raised three different issues with me. So I can speak to those if you want me to now.
Why don't we deal with Ms. Ricker's issues first? So you spoke to her, you took some notes in a meeting with her, you obtained documents
yes.
from her. Am I right in thinking you met with her once and she spoke to you about the issues, but I don't think you've got a file note of that meeting.
Okay.
And then she provided
documents to you, and you met with her again after she provided the documents, and that same day you sent a referral to the ESU?
Yes,
that sounds And the file note that you've got, it looks to me like it's a file note of that meeting you have on the 15th of March, the same day you send the referral to the ESU.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show you the email that you sent and the attachment. So can we bring up fss.0001.0067.3666? So you see this is on the left-hand side,
mm-hmm.
and this is your email to CO Complaints, but that's the ESU referral?
Yes.
And you say, I've been provided with the attached documentation from a staff member and have alerted Jess to it being sent for assessment. It's from a staff member from the Forensic DNA Laboratory. There is media attention directed towards this unit, so I'd appreciate your consideration of this as a matter of urgency, please.
Yes.
And in the summary, you say they provided feedback on a draft paper of which they were listed as a signatory reviewer. The feedback was not incorporated and their name was removed from the signatory list for the final version. They went on to question the science on two other occasions, but without success.
Yes.
And do you say you didn't understand that the science that was being questioned was the science that led to the figure of 1.86%?
No, not at that time.
I'll show you the attachment. Can we bring up fss.0001.0067.3667? So this is, it's a PDF document that has a number of parts to it, but this is the submission that you sent in, which has your file notes and all the documents you were provided by Ms. Ricker.
That's not my writing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Whose writing is that?
That's Ms. Ricker.
So she's given you a copy of her file note?
Yes.
And out of curiosity, had you read this?
Not at that stage.
When you sent it off to ESU, did you read it?
Briefly, she gave me a lot of information. My concern was around the disagreements in the scientific practice, more so that they were not, that there didn't seem at that point to be a mechanism for people, for Ms. Ricker, to have her comments incorporated. What I've subsequently, and you imagine we'll see from ESU, is that there was a subsequent document that I did send through that did show that Ms. Ricker was on the signatory list, but that didn't mean that there wasn't remaining concern about the process for raising concerns there.
But I'm getting the impression that your view at the time was that Ms. Ricker's complaint was that her view as a scientist wasn't being taken into account, and yet her name was on the document. But in any event, her view wasn't taken into account.
Yes. She initially told me her name was not on the document.
No, I understand. But I'm also getting the impression that the reason that you handled all of this in the way that you did at the time was because you didn't know anything about the subject matter in the lab. And do you think that's adequate, that somebody in the position of executive director doesn't have a working knowledge of what's happening in the lab? I know that you said that there are seven areas in FSS, and of course you can't be an expert, but if you don't know anything about it, then when you get a complaint like this one, which was directed really to a fundamental issue, the fundamental issue that the lab wasn't doing some of the work that it ought to be doing, with the result that evidence was not being produced that ought to be produced, then it's not surprising that you were unaware and that you didn't grasp the significance. Do you think, in terms of how a technical institution like this is managed at a senior level, is satisfactory?
I guess I can understand why someone may consider that it may not be.
But what do you think?
I don't think so.
Why is that?
Because As I said previously, I was not brought into this role to be a scientist.
I understand that. So, but when you have somebody bringing you a complaint like this, it seems to me that you misunderstood the nature of the complaint because you weren't aware of what they were doing and you weren't capable of sitting down and reading the documents and understanding them and conferring with Ms. Ricker or somebody to explain to you what it was all about, which was, well, I would think, well within your capacity, undoubtedly within your capacity to understand if you took the time. But you didn't, so that's all right. That's in the past. But do you think that a manager who lacks the ability to understand the significance of matters like this represents the best form of management we can have for a lab like this?
Well, I mean, I would say that my role was not the science. My role was to trust the experts, and that's what I did.
Yes, Mr. Hodge.
You see on this first page, if we just blow up the bottom third of the page, you see it says QPS.
Did you say my role was to trust the science?
My role was not to challenge the science.
Yes.
And I was very clear that I did not come into that role with any knowledge of that. It was not my area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So I was therefore in a position where I have, for example, in this case, I have a HP7 who I had no knowledge of anything other than this was an expert in their field.
Mm.
And so when they told me 1.8%, 1.86% is the number, I trusted that. And because I was led to believe that this...
I can understand that.
Yes.
Anybody can understand that, of course. But then when you have another scientist saying there is bad science here, how do you resolve it?
Well, that's why the external review was what I was hoping we would have, because that was the only way we could resolve it at the time.
I understand.
Because I wasn't in a position to... I'd only just started.
Yes.
I'd had one meeting with Anne Sparnips. I didn't even know who those people were. So I didn't know who I could have reached out to call. I didn't. I expected that, and I was fully, by this time, I was confident that a review was going to happen. I had had some input into the terms of reference, which I put in thresholds and DIFP into that.
Yes, I saw that.
So I was trying to be as exhaustive in the review as I possibly could, and I had confidence, and I even have an email that shows that I actually said we should go out to a number of different areas so that we can be transparent. So at that time I was confident that we could have this science addressed.
Yes, I understand. Thanks for that perspective. Yes, Mr. Hodge.
If you thought the way to address these things was by the review, is there a reason why you didn't directly say to your superiors, here is the issue raised by the QPS and here is the issue raised by the scientists?
I mean, it's clear from the records that I found that I must have had a conversation with Dr. Derrington and Professor McNeil, and it's quite possible that I said that, you know, the science had been challenged. As for why I didn't brief up about the specific police question, I thought that had been put in a ministerial brief as being...
When you say it's clear that you must have had a conversation... The issue of thresholds, put in that very general way, that had been raised by the Australian in the newspaper report, hadn't it?
It was in the media, yes.
And so it's unsurprising that the terms of reference and the review would refer to the very issue that had been raised by the media.
I think it would have been foolish not to.
But you had other information. You knew about the complaint that the police had made to you, and you knew about the issues being raised by the scientists. And I just want to understand, as you recall it, did you disclose all of that information to your superiors?
I can't recall whether I had a conversation. It's quite likely because I was talking with them very frequently.
So you see this part that we've got blown up on the screen. The note is QPS report slash options, QPS given options based on 0.008, where analysis of data indicates threshold should be less than this value?
Yes.
And I'm just trying to understand, do you not even remember reading this file note, or you think you read it and you just didn't understand?
I think I would have read it and just at the time absorbed it, but not necessarily processed it in that depth.
And then you see the next item is Jan 2021, KDR suggests review of DIFP quant ranges.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you say you just wouldn't have understood what that was about.
I later became aware of what the 3500 was, but not at that stage.
I understand. Leaving aside what the 3500 implementation was, the part which suggests review of DIFP quant ranges, you didn't understand what that was or connect it to the issue raised by the police?
I may have, but this was well before I arrived, so I guess I may have thought that it had been discussed up to that point.
But then if we go over to the next page, you see November 2021, KDR and AAP raised a management team need to consider doing a new data analysis to inform DIFP, as staff have concerns that we are getting lots of really good results from, I think that's reviewing or testing those.
I can see that.
And again, you say you didn't connect that to the issue being raised by the police?
I was becoming more aware that it was all linked.
And then you see then 10 February 2022, KDR asked JH if any movement on this idea since it was raised in management meeting, as minutes don't provide actions.
Mm-hmm.
And it says no movement to his knowledge.
I can see that.
And again, I'm just trying to understand, when you were getting a note recording this issue having been raised over a period of time with management and concerns about the quant range and the threshold limit, which is effectively the same thing, how it could be that you could not have connected these things?
At this time, I was starting to put that all together.
But when you say at this time, so this is March of 2022,
yeah.
And this is when you've got the scientists' complaints.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to understand your evidence. I had thought your evidence was you didn't understand that the scientists' complaints were raising the same thing as that being raised by the police.
Well, the terminology was a bit different, so I was obviously confused.
I see. And then if we go through, Mr. Operator, to fss.0001.0067.3709. So this is part of this bundle of material that you've sent off to ESU. And you see this is the options paper.
Yes.
And this would have been a document by now, that is by mid-March, that you must have been familiar with.
I was. By then, yes, I was aware of it.
A month earlier, you'd emailed it to Inspector
Neville. Yes, I did.
And you'd read it.
Yes.
And if we go to page .3718, which is the conclusion part with the options to consider, and you see there's some handwriting there.
Yes.
And whose handwriting was that?
That's not mine.
And you see it's circled around 1.45% and says based on false assumptions.
Yes.
That is a profile valuable or not rather than profile or not.
Yes.
And when you went through the material that Ms. Ricker provided to you, you didn't notice that the handwriting was identifying the very issue that the police were identifying?
1.45 wasn't something that was being identified at that stage, as far as I understand it, 1.86 was being mentioned.
Oh, I see. So you didn't know what the connection was between 1.86 and 1.45.
I do now.
But you didn't at the time.
I do now.
Right, but you say at the time you didn't put it together?
It seems not.
And ESU didn't accept the complaint as raising an issue for them? Sorry, that is, they accepted the complaint, they reviewed it, but it wasn't something that they could progress further?
So they replied back saying that they'd assessed it and it did not constitute public interest disclosure or fulfil the requirements for a CCC referral.
Yes.
They, from recollection, they said that they weren't qualified to assess the science and they returned it back to the department.
And so that meant returning back to you?
Yes.
And what did you do?
This was when I was confident that the review was going to start. So it would have been part of the considerations of the external reviewers.
And so did you pass it on to somebody?
Who would I have passed it on to? I was waiting for a review to start.
Who would you have passed on the information from the scientists?
I would have passed it on to the external review officers as part of the review.
Why not pass it on to your superiors?
I could have done that.
And why didn't you?
I may have discussed it with them.
You also met with Dr. Muller. Can we bring up WIT.0011.0013.0001?
I think it's important to note here that this was from 2018, so I had no knowledge of what had been done between when that paper came out.
No, I understand. You were fresh to the job and you were learning.
I had no handover.
No, I understand that.
At all. None. When it came to this science anyway.
So you see, these are your notes from your meeting with Dr. Muller.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On the 17th of March?
Yes.
And you said there were three issues that were raised, but they weren't the issues that Ms. Ricker was raising?
Oh, well, they were a different context, but still the scientific aspects of it.
But the first issue, which is DIFP, which mm-hmm. you've taken a note of, mm-hmm. that is the same issue, isn't it?
DIFP was the way they reported it. As for the thresholds, that's a bit different. Like they put DIFP as the comment. I subsequently became aware. So it's the thresholds, but it's the comment code that they would put on the thresholds. So it is all interlinked.
And if we blow up the notes from the, perhaps from DIFP downwards, just so that's a bit easier for Ms. Keller to read. So this is your handwritten notes as Dr. Muller is talking you through this thing?
Oh, and afterwards, after the notes that I took after I spoke with her.
Oh, I see. You both took some notes while she was talking to you, but you also then expanded out on it.
Yes, otherwise I wouldn't have been listening to her.
And you see that the first bullet point says August 2015 project.
Mm-hmm.
163 was to assess automicrocon concentrating.
Yes.
Prior to this, we were sending certain values to microcon.
Yes.
And then you see that the next bullet point down says 8% yielded profiles for NSIP.
Yes.
And then the next bullet point says proposals times 3 and option 2 was adopted.
Yes.
And then there's an asterisk which says risks, page 18.
Yes.
And what's that page 18 referable to?
The documents you gave me.
I see. And you see it says, or your note next to it is suggestive of don't bother, there's not enough there.
That's what she said to me.
Yes.
That's my recollection of what she said to me.
And then you see she then in the next bullet point of what you've noted down is mentioned the issue of Can you just read that? Is that statement then rework for a particular case? Kylie said yes, Sharon said no, not enough time?
Yes.
And then the next asterisk point is we have adopted the most risky and cost-effective option?
Yes.
And then the next bullet point says microcons ceased in 2018?
That's what she must have said to me.
Reporting scientists not happy?
Yes.
And did you know at this time what microcons meant?
Not really.
Because this, I don't want to take you back through the documents, but the, do you agree with me that by March there were many documents that you'd received, many emails from the police included, referring to concentration?
Yes.
And did you know what concentration was?
Basically.
So did you know what microcons was?
Not at that stage. Certainly not like to 35 or anything like that that we now know.
And then you see at the bottom of the page, you see you say, I advised Ingrid that this may represent an ESU referral.
Yes.
And then there's a note you've taken about DIFP with less than 0.088.
Mm-hmm.
And can we go over the page? Sorry. And then if we just blow up that last part there at the top of the page where it says Ingrid gave examples.
Yes.
And do you remember now what that's about?
She presented me with some, they look like sort of printouts from a database, presumably the forensic register. I don't know. I don't have access to forensic register.
And then can we go back to the first page? And then just blow up at the very top of the page from about the first seven lines. So you've recorded that Dr. Muller asked for a private meeting?
Yes.
And you see over on the right-hand side, you've recorded Ingrid scared of Kathy?
That's what she told me.
And Kathy punishes people?
That's what she said.
And then you see the quote that you've written down from her is, it's possible criminals are getting off scot-free in Queensland?
Yes.
And I want to suggest to you, even if you hadn't known before the 17th of March, you knew from the 17th of March onwards that Dr. Muller was scared of Ms. Allen?
I did.
And you knew that she believed that Ms. Allen punished people?
That's what she told me.
And you see the quotation you've put, which is, it's possible criminals are getting off scot-free in Queensland.
Yes.
You understood that reflected a concern that Dr. Muller had about the consequences of bad science being used?
No, I took it as exactly what that says.
What did you think was the cause of it's possible criminals are getting off scot-free in Queensland?
That she was challenging the scientific processes.
Yes, that is. She was saying to you there is a problem with the scientific processes and they could lead to criminals getting off in Queensland.
That's what she said to me.
And so then you refer that to the ESU?
A combination of that.
And again, the ESU accepted it, but it didn't in what was explained to them, it didn't constitute official corruption.
That's what I was told by them.
And so they sent it back to you to deal
with.
Yep. And so at this stage, you had what Dr. Muller was putting to you was actually three issues: DIFP, sperm, and inaction by management. And just tell us, what were the steps that you then took to address those issues?
So again, I was confident at that stage that there was going to be an external independent review, and I was hopeful that that would include all of the scientific processes that were included in the terms of reference, which were very broad. These issues seem to have been from years prior, and I had no knowledge of what had been done back then. So
did you investigate?
Not at that stage.
When you say not at that stage, that suggests that you did it at some stage. Did you at some stage investigate these complaints?
Not at that stage. No, I did not.
Again, sorry, you keep saying not at this stage. I just need to understand. When you say that, what it suggests is you didn't do it then, but you did it later. Did you do it later?
No, I was hoping that the review would identify that.
By that stage, as I understand it, I'm looking at an email in your attached to your statement of 22 February from you to Brett Bricknell. Who is Mr. Bricknell?
Yes.
Who is Mr. Bricknell?
He was the general manager
of
PQFSS.
And Petra Derrington,
she's the chief pathologist.
And the two lawyers attached to the to Queensland Health. And by that stage, you were emailing to them suggesting places where you might look for reviewers for this review.
I was.
And again, on the 24th of February, you suggested the National Institute as a place.
Yes.
And there's an email from Ms. Lord to you and Mr. Bricknell and Ms. Derrington that the terms of reference have been drafted by Minter Ellison.
Yes.
So Ms. Moller then sees you 3 weeks later.
Yes.
Yes, I'm just trying to get the timeline in my mind. Yes, thank you.
I think you're right, is by mid-March, you knew that the QPS had been raising an issue about testing thresholds and said it was a priority for them in December of the year before.
Yes.
And you knew that Ms. Ricker had come to you and raised an issue about the science behind the options paper.
Yes.
And you knew that Dr. Muller had come to you and raised three issues, but one of which was about this testing threshold.
Yes.
And you believed that Kathy Allen was not dealing with it urgently.
That's the impression I had.
And you believed it was an urgent matter.
Yes.
And you must have understood by then that there was a disparity between what was claimed to be the consequence of not testing these samples and what seemed to be turning out to be the consequence of not testing the samples.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yes, by mid-March, you must have understood that there was a disparity between what had been claimed by the lab to be the consequence of not testing the samples and what it seemed to be on the police's account turning out to be the consequence of not testing the samples.
Yes, I guess so, yes.
And so did you take all of this information and present it to your superiors to say, we have a very urgent situation where both the police and scientists who are coming to meet with me privately are raising an issue?
I think I did speak with Dr. Derrington and Professor McNeil.
Is there something, you've obviously reviewed a lot of documents that you have prepared in your contemporaneous documents and you're familiar with them, you refer to your file notes in answer to my questions. Is there any document you've seen in which you convey to anyone a sense of urgency about this issue?
There may not be a document, but there was certainly a lot of discussions around the importance of this review.
Perhaps again, because I think you'll be back tomorrow, you could look through your documents and see if you can find something where you think it conveys a sense of urgency to any of your superiors.
I don't think there is anything that you'll find in my emails. I've checked my emails. Certainly that doesn't mean that there weren't conversations about what should go into the external review and the requirement for the external review. So if I had sent an email that said this is urgent, I'm not sure there'll be one. Certainly my actions were showing that I was supporting an external review happening.
Now, on the 1st of April, Inspector Neville again followed up the issue. Can we bring up qps.0001.1312.0001? Oh, I'm sorry, actually, there's something else I just need to ask you about. Mr. Operator, can we just bring up the witness statement again? And I just need to Oh, it's the supplementary witness statement, the first supplementary witness statement. The doc ID for that one is WIT.0017.0248.0001. And can we go to page 21 of that document and blow up paragraph 72? So this is a paragraph which you affirmed in response to an opinion expressed by Mr. Drummond that you should have referred the information up to him?
Yes.
And you say, I understand it has been suggested in the evidence given in this commission of inquiry that following receipt of the information, I should have referred the information to the acting director general. I did not refer the information to the acting director general because of the independence of the ESU's functions. As a matter of practice, no other information that is the subject of an ESU referral is referred to the acting director general and the confidentiality obligations that I understood applied to me by virtue of section 65 of the PID Act.
Yes, and there's a subsequent statement from yesterday that clarifies that point, those points.
Well, it doesn't clarify it, does it? I want to understand this. Is 72, is that true?
Yes.
It's true that you didn't refer information to the acting director general because of the independence of the ESU's functions and because of the confidentiality obligations that you understood applied to you by virtue of section 65 of the PID Act?
This relates to when this was prepared, this was what I, my obligations that I took as the confidentiality were not to disclose the names of the persons who came and spoke to me. That's the confidentiality aspects.
That's not what you say.
Pardon?
That's not what you say. You know that. Where do you say, I therefore thought I had to keep confidential the names of the people?
That's in my supplementary statement.
Where do you say in that paragraph, I thought I had to keep confidential the names?
It doesn't say it there, but you've assumed it.
I've assumed what?
You've turned it into that. That's not what it means to me.
It says I did not refer the information to the acting director general.
Mm-hmm.
And that follows on from the first sentence, which says, I understand it has been suggested in the evidence given in this commission of inquiry that following receipt of the information received from Ms. Ricker, Dr. Muller and Ms. Keller.
Mm-hmm.
So the information being referred to in all places is the information received from the three people.
Okay.
But it is, isn't it?
Okay.
It's your statement. Isn't that what it means?
You think about it, Ms. Kellan. Take your time.
Mm-hmm.
You'd received an approach from Ms. Ricker, Dr. Moller, and Angelina Keller.
Yes.
Confusingly. And
she's very nice.
As a consequence of that, you thought it a justified referral to the ESU by means of a PID, is that right?
You send it to the complaints and you ask them to assess it.
Right. Okay. So you send it to them and you say, I didn't refer the information to the acting director general because of the independence of the ESU's functions. What do you mean by that?
Well, they are a standalone body that...
Yes. I understand they're independent, mm-hmm. but I'm really talking about the word because. I didn't refer it to the Director General because of the independence of the ESU.
Okay, that's probably poorly worded.
What did you mean then?
Well, my understanding is that because of the nature of what the Ethical Standards Unit does... And you can see from my email, highly confidential, everything was contained to try and because I've always considered that when something's referred to ESU, the disclosures can be fearful. So I try and contain everything I possibly can to protect them. I've probably worded this very poorly.
Well, don't worry about the wording.
My intention was to protect those people. And I was aware at that stage I had scientific differences of opinion. I was aware about the external review. I didn't brief up with the detail, because I was trying to protect the people that were coming forth to me.
Yes, I understand. Yes, Mr. Hodge.
Particularly as, if I may add, at least one of them said that they were frightened of retribution. So
yes,
I was
right.
making every attempt to be very confidential about the whole thing. So
so what you're being asked really is, on this premise, I think, you can keep confidential that who has approached you and how many people have approached you.
Yes.
But you can advise the acting DG about the substance of the matter. And you're being asked, why didn't you do that? Is that correct, Mr. Hodge?
It goes a bit further than that.
All right. Well, you continue. But,
you know that the criticism that was made by the acting director general of you in his evidence is that you did not brief up the information from the scientists.
To him?
Yes.
Yes.
And in your first supplementary statement on Friday, you sought to suggest that the reason that you hadn't briefed up that information was because of the independence of the ESU's functions and confidentiality obligations that you thought were imposed on you by statute.
Yes.
Sorry, Commissioner, I hesitate to get to my feet.
I'm sorry. Yes, Mr.
Not at all. My friends referred that sentence to the
witness. I'm sorry. Could you speak up a little?
I'm sorry, Your Honour. I'm sorry, Commissioner. My friends referred to that paragraph now on multiple occasions,
yes.
And yet seems unable to refer to the phrase in the middle, as a matter of practice, no other information, and so on.
I'm sorry, which part?
What? As a matter of practice, no other information that is the subject of an ESU referral is referred to the acting director general. I wonder if the passage is going to be put, if it could be put completely to the witness rather than the first and
last
part.
I'm sure Mr. Hodge is going to cover all of it.
I would hope so, but it's now, and that's what I was hoping, but it's now four times we've had the first clause.
He's still working.
We've had the first clause and the last commissioner and not the middle on four occasions. I simply want it to be put fairly.
And if he doesn't, you will.
I will. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Hodge.
So, Ms. Keller, your barrister would like you to read the whole of the sentence. So you tell me, but it looks like in order to meet the criticism that had been implicitly made of you by Mr. Drummond, you said the reason that you didn't provide that information was because, A, of the independence of the ESU's functions, B, because as a matter of practice, no information that, or no other information that is the subject of an ESU referral is referred to the acting director general, and C, the confidentiality obligations that you understood applied to you by virtue of Section 65 of the PID Act.
That's what it says there.
And is that true?
That's how I understood it. And certainly I don't recall ever in any of my roles briefing up to the Director General about an ESU referral.
Yes, but you understand the issue and the criticism of you is about not having briefed up the information.
Well, I would say that I did brief up to, and that's part of my supplementary statement from yesterday.
Well, let's bring up your supplementary statement. So can we leave the statement, the first supplementary statement on one side of the screen, and then bring up the other supplementary statement where the file note is, which is WIT.0017.0249.0001. So this is the further supplementary statement.
Yes.
And is what happened, you discovered an email that you'd sent to Professor McNeil and Ms. Darrington?
Yes, Dr. Darrington.
Dr. Darrington, I'm sorry. And in that email to Professor McNeil and Dr. Darrington, you'd referred to the two referrals discussed in the previous week.
Yes.
And we'll bring that up so that, and again, we'll do that on the left-hand side of the screen. So this is, I only have a name of it, it's LK-146. It should be the only attachment to that further supplementary statement. So you email them on the 20th of March in the morning and say, FYI, the two referrals discussed last week have not been determined to constitute PIDs.
Yes.
Can be managed as part of the review.
Yes.
And do you remember the discussion that you'd had with them about the two referrals?
Not specifically. Certainly we were discussing the review quite frequently at that stage.
So you don't remember what you told them about what the content of the complaints were?
I expect that I would have, but I expect that I would have told them that we had some challenges to the scientific processes and that, again, I was confident the review would be part of that assessment.
Did you tell them the names of the complaints?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. And so in your paragraph 72, when you said, I did not refer the information to the Acting Director General because of the independence of the ESU's functions. You see that?
Yes, you've brought it to my attention a number of times. So, yes, I can see that.
And that statement was rendered untrue by virtue of the email that you sent to Professor McNeil and Dr. Derrington, wasn't it?
How is that untrue?
Because you had referred the information to Professor McNeil and Dr. Derrington, notwithstanding.
I think the context is different. Mr. Hodge, that in paragraph 72, she's speaking about closeting the information because it's going to the ESU and not wishing anybody to, any unnecessary people to know that that's happened so that there can be no suggestion of any interference. And this is after the ESU has rejected the complaints. And so it's necessary to consider whether they can be addressed otherwise. And so she's informing them that she intends to see that it's addressed as part of the review.
I understand what you say, Commissioner. Did you inform the Acting Director General of it after the ESU complaints
have
been sent back?
No.
And do you say paragraph 72 explains why you didn't refer it up to the Acting Director General after the complaints had come back from the ESU?
So as I said in my statement, as a matter of practice, no other information that is subject to an ESU referral is referred to the Acting Director General. That is, as I said earlier, it's very infrequent. In fact, I don't think I can recall any circumstances where I would refer an ESU referral to the Director General. The Director General has... I can't understand how the Director General could cope with being briefed on every single ESU referral. So I briefed up to two of my seniors to the Director General. I did not.
Do you understand the criticism that was made of you by Mr. Drummond was that you did not refer up to him, not the fact of the ESU referral, but the information that gave rise to the ESU referral. And that's why in your statement you deal with the information.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's his view.
And at the time, you'd had a meeting, as I understand it, with the Acting Director General on the 8th of March.
About the external review?
Yes.
Yes.
And about issues in relation to the DNA lab?
About consolidating the approach to the external review.
And I'm now getting slightly confused because perhaps if we can then bring up that supplementary further statement again on the left-hand side of the screen, which is WIT.0017.0249.0001, and go to page 2. And you see in paragraph 8 you say, I wish to clarify that the information that I was referring to in that paragraph, and that's referring to paragraph 72 of your preceding statement, was the identity of the disclosers.
Yep.
That is, I would not refer the name of a discloser to the Acting Director General because of the confidentiality obligations that I understood applied to me.
Yes.
This consideration would not, however, preclude me from referring the subject of a disclosure to the Acting Director General.
That's right.
And so in paragraph 72, when it refers to the information, are you saying you never intended that to refer to the information, you just intended it to refer to the identity of the disclosers?
That was my concern, was the identity of the disclosers. I felt that I was addressing the scientific disagreements or challenges as part of the review.
So all I'm trying to do now is just understand what your evidence is. In 72, when you say, I did not refer the information to the Acting Director General, we should read that as, I did not refer the identity of the disclosers to the Acting Director General because of the independence of the ESU's function
as a matter of practice, no other, I guess this should now be identity of disclosers, that is the subject of an ESU referral is referred to the Acting Director General, and the confidentiality obligation that I understood applied to me by virtue of Section 65 of the PID Act?
So just to be really clear, I was very concerned about the identification of the disclosers based on what they had told me. I did not brief the Director General. The information that's been disclosed to me is still, it was briefed in concept form to Dr. Derrington and Professor McNeil. At no time did I brief the Director General about the content of the conversations with those disclosers or their names. I briefed up to the two more senior people above me.
Just again, though, if you look at paragraph 72 of your supplementary statement, I just want to understand, should we read that last sentence of 72 as meaning, I did not refer the identity of the disclosers to the Acting Director General because of the independence of the ESU's functions. As a matter of practice, the identities of no other discloser that is the subject of an ESU referral is referred to the Acting Director General, and the confidentiality obligations that I understood applied to me by virtue of Section 65 of the PID Act.
I think I've answered why I didn't. It's a combination of those things.
Well, we can read paragraphs 8 of your further supplementary statement and paragraph 72, and the Commissioner can make his own mind up. Now, can I then bring up QPS.0001.1312.0001?
Are we moving on to a different subject?
Yeah.
Do you want a break, Ms. Keller? We often break in the afternoon for 15 minutes, so if you want a break, we can have one.
Thank you, Commissioner.
All right, we'll break for 15 minutes.
All right.